Hey everyone, buckle your seatbelts because the guest this time, Judith Genya, is just an exceptional human being. I don't even have words, so I'm going to read a few blurbs from her website. Now, Judith is a Nobel Peace Prize nominee and the recipient of many awards for her groundbreaking work on peace and healing. She founded the Global Children's Organization, which gave direct services to children during and following active conflicts in Bosnia, Croatia, Northern Ireland, Los Angeles, California, and Northern New Mexico. And we talk about that a little bit later in this episode. But also, I mean, Judith does it all. She is an author. She's an activist. She's a peacemaker. She's a painter. She's a poet. I mean, literally, this woman is just exceptional. But as with all stories created by the lives that we lead, Judith is best at talking about herself, the work she's done in the world, and how, in her powerful way, she has created beauty and encounter and inspiration her entire life. So let's get to it. I can't wait for you to meet Judith. Here we go.
The saddest answer that I heard was in Northern Ireland. So this is right at the end of the troubles between Protestant and Catholic kids, but things were still not great. They're still not great, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this little girl, little Irish girl with red hair like yours, with lots of freckles, big blue eyes, said, and she was about 8. I said, well, where do you feel safe? And she said, I feel safe under me bed holding a petrol bomb, a homemade bomb with gas and a thing you could light, a wick, you know. After I was doing these adoptions in Russia, and I had founded the NGO called Global Children's Organization, I was still in Hawaii. I was still practicing law, but I got a lot of publicity for the work in Russia, and I was collecting medicine and toys and clothes and blah, blah, blah for the orphanages. And one day, a young man from Sarajevo, who was on a basketball scholarship in Honolulu, I had spoken at his class on Russian history, and he came to help with the NGO. And then he says to me, well, why aren't you helping in my country? And I said, well, what country is that? I didn't know. He said, Bosnia. My parents are under siege in Sarajevo. So here's this kid. He's playing basketball in Hawaii, and his parents are under siege in Sarajevo. So I was also working in in Albania. So I look at the map. I had never been to the former Yugoslavia. And, oh, look, it's between Russia and Albania. I thought, okay, I said to him, I'll go there if you can arrange for someone to meet me at the airport. And, of course, the only place you could go was in Zagreb. You couldn't, because Sarajevo was closed off. So I went there, and I was mad at the airport. And from that meeting, I met a young man who later became my fixer and my friend and helped me do everything. He was 25, and he had just come from working with Doctors Without Borders in Sarajevo. He was from Zagreb. So I said, well, I want to go see what's happening to the children who come out of this war. So there were all these displaced person centers, refugee camps, orphanages. So we went to a few, and I was literally gobsmacked. I had never seen the results of war up close like that. I had seen poverty. I'd seen this and that, but not a war. And you know, the buildings were destroyed, but the people were destroyed. So I said to myself, I have to find some way to help these kids. And I didn't know what it was. So we went to an orphanage in Split. Split is a major city in Croatia that has a port, and it was the staging ground of the war in Bosnia. So I get to the orphanage, and the man who was the director says, oh, I hate all you humanitarian aid people. Oh, I said, why? He said, because everybody comes here and nobody does anything. They just want a photo op. So I said, well, if somebody were to do something, what do you think is the single most needed thing for children in this war? And he said, surprisingly, a summer camp. So I go, summer camp? Oh, you know, I had just done that other one. And so I went to bed that night, sleeping on a cement floor somewhere. And I had this vision because we had flown over. Croatia has 1,000 islands along the Adriatic. We'd flown over them. And where we were in Split and around there, a lot of the buildings had been destroyed. And I thought, well, there's got to be an island that hasn't been attacked in this war, that has an intact building that we could use for this camp somewhere. And a lot of the buildings along that coast were built by the Venetians when they controlled the region, and they were very beautiful. And I thought, there's got to be something. And I had a vision, a literal vision of a beautiful big building on an island that hadn't been touched. Okay. So the next morning I get up and I had these two guys, these two 20-year-olds, somethings with me. And I said, I want to do a summer camp for kids from the war. Will you help me? I don't have any money. I don't have any background. I have an NGO, but I think we can do it. Actually, I know we can do it. And we're going to do it in August. This is the end of April. We're going to do it the end of August. So I was in my vision, I was really clear about kinds of things that probably needed to get done. So I said to the one from Zagreb, who I called Scout, I said, okay, you need to take care of whatever administrative things have to happen to allow this to happen. And you need to find the kids that can come from these various displaced persons center and so forth and get the permission for that. And you also need to arrange the transportation, and you need to find bilingual volunteers, because I had decided I was going to use this model, which is now used a lot in nonprofit organizations, of a sort of volunteer tourism that people pay their own way to support a project and they come to it. And so I figured that's what we were going to do. And I told the other one, the other young man who lived around Split, I said, you need to find the facility. And I want it to be really simple, have no war damage. And he said, oh, and there are all these Russian style casinos there. I said, no casino, no bombed out part, just a simple thing that has a place people can sleep and eat and swim. And it's very calm. He didn't grasp that because I was an American and clearly I would want a casino. but anyway, he agreed to do it. And we didn't have internet and we didn't have cell phones. So I was going to go back to Hawaii and I said, okay, I'm going to buy each of you a fax machine, because they did have fax machine. And that's how we'll communicate. And so that's what we had. And so then I went back to Honolulu. So now it's like the beginning of May. And I had to get this whole thing together, raise all the money, find the American volunteers that would pay this money. And I did it. You know, I did it. It was very hard. And I didn't know that it would really come together, but I believed it would. You know, there's the difference between knowing factually and believing in a very gut heart way. So I had this belief, And I did it. And when I went, I was given a lot of publicity by the press in Honolulu. And so I would be on, and they'd ask me, well, where are you going to be? I would say, oh, on a beautiful island off the coast and in a lovely, safe building. I didn't have a building. But anyway, I knew that's where we were going to be. So then they'd say, well, what are you going to eat? So I had eaten really good fresh fish and other things along the coast. And they also have this absolutely fabulous, delicious, fresh produce and things. So I described all that food and said, people will bring it to the island we're on and we'll have all this really good fresh food. And anything they asked, I would have an answer for, although it wasn't real. And so I was saying to myself, well, I hope it becomes real. But anyway, so I would describe this thing. And it got really, really dicey because we didn't have a place. And I had various volunteers. And because I was on TV in Honolulu, people would tune in from who were tourists and say, oh, I want to participate. So I got some random volunteers like that and people who'd been on that other global discovery thing. And my son who had just graduated and my niece who had just graduated and various friends of, you know, theirs and so on. So we had a full contingent of people. We didn't have a place, however. And so around the 1st of August, I was leaving on the 10th of August. The guy from Croatia, from Split, sent me a fax and he said, well, I found this place. You're going to hate it, but, you know, we can do it. And the money seemed reasonable. I mean, I didn't know how much anything was going to cost even. So I said, well, just book it, you know, take it. And so, okay, so I went on the 1st of August with a group of volunteers from Hawaii, and we went to San Francisco, picked up some more volunteers, went to New York, picked up more volunteers, and then we went to Prague, and we're all schlepping all these bags of supplies and everything. And we got finally to Rijeka, which is the northernmost port in Croatia. So we got on an overnight ferry with all our bags of stuff and went to Split. And then we transferred the next day to another ferry that went to the larger island near the island we were going to. And the larger island is called Korčula. And then we took a small ferry to this other island that was going to be our island. And I kept telling the volunteers, well, don't expect too much because the guy had told me, you know, you're going to hate it. I don't know why he told me that. Anyway, so we get there, and it was absolutely what I envisioned. It was a miracle, a total miracle. So we were in a 15th century Franciscan monastery built by people from monks from Venice on a little island. Nobody lives on the island now. There's a 500-year-old olive grove and this beautiful, beautiful monastery. And Tito, you know, who had been head of the president of Yugoslavia, had kicked out the Franciscans and made it into the national basketball camp of Yugoslavia. So there were basketball courts and volleyball courts and dormitories and everything one would need. And every day, people from Korčula would come over with the food, the fresh fruit and the fish I described, and take care of the kitchen and serve the meals and clean up the place. And it was absolutely unbelievable. So that was the biggest miracle that's ever occurred in my life.
Thank you.
really especially appreciated about my conversation with Judith was that, you know, you wake up one day and you don't understand how your entire life might change because you meet someone or you read something and everything just shifts. And I think what's really super deluxe cool about Judith is that she's ready for the adventure, and she's such a great example of how we should be ready for the adventure too. And of course, I'm going to say, check out the episode show notes, because there will be links. There will be links to what Judith is doing in the world and the audiobook that she's currently finishing, so that you can continue to follow how Judith is making this world still a more incredible place. She's unstoppable, everyone. She's unstoppable. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Please do not forget to hit the subscribe button or the follow button so that you never miss an episode. And you know what? I would be so appreciative if you'd rate or review the podcast. I'm really looking for 30 to 50 more ratings and reviews on every single platform where you can find me. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. I think you already know what I'm going to say. Be up for the adventure. Be up for the message. Accept the invitation. This world is co-creating with us and wanting to engage in magic with us. All right, I'll see you the next time for the very next episode. And until then, I hope your life is filled with listening to this podcast, making new friends who are super cool, and dancing while everybody's watching.